Good afternoon, and welcome to the June 13th edition of Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis. Patty is on her way. She'll be here in a few minutes. Alex, the intern, he's home now.
He's home now.
He was on his way. He got stuck at a service station right near his house. His car broke down. Alex is home recording the show. So you can hear the show if you're not hearing the whole show and you want to go back and hear the rest of it. Download podcasts of any of our shows that we have up online at lambdaweekly.com, and you can friend us on Facebook.
Yes.
Now I have a story. I want to wait till Patty gets here because she hates when I do my Albany stories, and then I always have a good Baylor story.
We can wait for that. There's a lot of other news that we haven't had time to talk about.
There is. Go ahead.
Do you want to start with Prop 8?
Okay, let's start with the Prop 8 story. Prop 8 is going to have its final arguments
mm-hmm.
are going to be heard this week in that California case. That's the case that was the gay marriage case. 18,000 couples did get married. Their marriages are legal. Nobody else's are, or no marriages after that. There was a proposition. The proposition
passed
to end same-sex marriage
right.
in the state of California. So,
and that was challenged in court.
It was challenged in court. The state decided not to defend it, but a couple of different groups did decide to defend. The plaintiffs were represented by David Boies and Ted Olson, who are two attorneys who were on opposite ends of the spectrum. One of them had represented, Boies represented Al Gore, mm-hmm. and Olson represented George Bush in Bush v. Gore.
Right.
And apparently the two of them, while they're arguing in court, they became very friendly.
Yes.
And anyway, so the same-sex marriage case came along, and they decided to argue it together. Olson will come in. This case, obviously, it's going to the Supreme Court. Olson will be very helpful, actually, once the argument gets to the Supreme Court, because he's friendly with three or four people on the court, specifically Scalia, Thomas, the more conservative justices on the Supreme Court. So it will be harder for them to rule against him. Not that they wouldn't. It will be harder, I think, to rule against him. And they will listen with an open mind to arguments that Ted Olson presents to them. So he's very important to this case, not as important in the lower court. He is important in the lower court.
He's important, but I think you're giving Scalia and Thomas a little too much credit. I don't think they're going to go into this with an open mind if their life depended on it.
You know, I think they'll have to. I think they'll listen to what Ted Olson says. They'll give it more of a listen than they would have had David Boies delivered the arguments himself.
Well, first of all, do you think the Supreme Court will even take the case?
That's the question. How is the lower court going to rule now? Now, it's really interesting. Here's what happened this week. The judge, Judge Walker, has sent to both sides, the plaintiffs and the defendants, a list of 39 questions that are to be addressed during the closing arguments. The breadth of inquiries, this is a quote from a report I read, the breadth of inquiries posed by U.S. District Judge Vaughn R. Walker means that his decision likely will be blockbuster in scope. The other thing about that these questions seem to reveal, they're not broad-based questions. What they are, they're very specific questions that seem to address holes in what he's already probably written in a preliminary decision.
Right.
So it looks like he really has written out his
opinion.
Yeah. And he wants these attorneys on both sides to discuss in their final arguments and address these specific areas. First question that he asks is, what does it mean to have a, quote, choice in one's sexual orientation? That's something addressed to both sides. Both sides can address it in an open way, and both sides can talk about what is choice in sexual orientation. Does it mean that we have a choice? Do we have a choice? Don't we have a choice? What he's going to argue is, we don't have a choice.
Right.
What the other side is going to say, the defendants are going to say we don't have a choice, or that we do have a choice.
The
plaintiffs are going to say
we don't have a choice,
but even if we did, it's not up to the government to tell us that the choice is bad.
Right.
Is my mic working?
Your mic is working.
Your mic is working very well.
I just want to note, I was listening in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I had to follow a house down Central Expressway. I could not get away from it. I knew it was going to take me a while.
Patty was following a house. Like, houses drive. Okay, yes, Patty.
They do.
So Patty was drinking. Patty's been drinking this morning. Yeah.
Anyway, I was going to note, and I was listening in the car, you know why Ted Olson is so chummy with the justices?
No.
It's because he did the job in the Bush administration that Elena Kagan is doing currently for Obama. She was Solicitor General. So he argued all the cases.
Don't you agree, though, that the conservative side, if it gets to the Supreme Court, in other words, if they agree to take the case, that Scalia and Thomas, that they're just more likely, and Alito, more likely to listen to the arguments presented by Ted Olson than they would be by anybody else?
And he has the potential to fool them, see, because they could slip into that groove where they think he's arguing on behalf of the federal government, in which case,
I said David was giving him too much credit, but, you know, if it gets to the Supreme Court, hopefully I am proven dead wrong.
Right. These questions, though, that the judge posed, these are fascinating questions because it gets right to where his holes are in his preliminary. This is Judge Vaughn. Yeah. One of the questions, what is the import of evidence showing that marriage has been historically limited to a man and a woman? So what he's asking is, we know that historically marriage has been man and a woman. Why is
or
it
a man and women.
No, exactly.
Or man and women.
A man and a woman.
Right, well.
Man and women.
But he asked it, a man and a woman, and I think what your answer is there is, well, biblically that isn't what it shows.
No.
And that's a great answer.
Women were chattel. Women were property.
So, but what's the importance of this evidence is what he's asking. He already knows that there's historical evidence of that. He wants to know, so? That's really what he's asking there. Now, obviously, the traditional marriage side is going to argue, raising children and blah, 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 and good for society and all that kind of stuff. That we know is not necessarily true, that the marriage should only be for procreation, but the plaintiff side is going to argue.
Well, so far they've argued nothing. The big crux of it is that they claimed that marriage equality will harm heterosexual marriages, and they have zero evidence. They only presented like two witnesses.
Well, and here's another interesting question. One of those two witnesses, his name was Blankenhorn, his testimony was based on, and he read into evidence, some of the writings of George Reekers, who in the meantime, of course,
Had his luggage carried
by a gay male prostitute.
Right.
The court has reserved ruling on plaintiff's motion. Plaintiffs have motioned to exclude Blankenhorn's testimony. So they have two witnesses. The court may actually rule that one of their two witnesses should be excluded completely. This is what he asked, though. He says, if the motion is granted, is there any other evidence to support a finding that Proposition 8 advances a legitimate government interest? What's he saying there?
He's saying he doesn't believe their case.
Well, it sounds like the same thing that the Hawaii justices did back when their same-sex marriage fight started. You know, when they sent it back to the lower court, they said, you know, you need to show us a compelling reason why that same-sex couples can't get married, you know, which is the highest bar, and they weren't able to show it, but then they went and changed
and made it illegal anyway.
It made it illegal, by altering their, amending their constitution. But I'm sure it's the same thing here, you know. Please give me a reason why what's in the interest of the government to not let same-sex couples get married.
Right. So, okay, here's another question. If spouses are obligated to one another, if two spouses are obligated to one another for mutual support, if legal spousal obligations have no basis in the gender of the spouse, so he's saying, okay, we have marriage. In marriage, you have financial mutual support. Actually, he's not even saying mutual financial, but you support each other.
Mm-hmm.
If legal spousal obligations, which usually is financial, has no basis in gender, in other words, Patty, if let's say Aaron has some bills and you two are married, you have those obligations for her, or Patty, you and LaRon are married and he has some bills and you're responsible for them. Why does gender matter there? And the question then is, what purpose does a law requiring that a marital partnership consist of one man and one woman serve?
So it doesn't, because we know that there are couples who don't have kids. We know that there are same-sex couples who do have kids.
Exactly.
There are many of those who can't reproduce, who don't choose not to reproduce. And, you know, is that, you know, in some way judging them, placing them in a different category of citizenship because they cannot? It's such a bogus argument. There is no purpose that serves the state.
And you know, I'm even reading this differently. I'm reading this, your spouse, Patty, either LaRon or Aaron in this case, ran up some bills. And you, as the breadwinner, since Aaron's a stay-at-home mom and LaRon is a stay-at-home dad, you know, raising your kids or not, or what, for whatever reason, but they ran up some bills. LaRon, who you're legally married to, you have responsibility for. Aaron, who you're not married to, you're not responsible for. What he's saying, you know, they both like to shop at Neiman's, and they bought
different departments,
but they both like to shop at Neiman's, and they spend an awful lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, if you were married to, you'd have the responsibility for. The other one, since you can't get married to, you don't have the responsibility for. I think what he's just saying is those kinds of responsibilities. Why does it matter what the gender is of the other person?
I tell you what, Neiman sure doesn't care.
No. Right.
As long as they get their money.
Exactly. Right.
You know, with both of them, let's say you went to Home Depot and you just bought a new dishwasher, and that spouse can't pay for it. It's in your house, you're using it. You have the responsibility in the house you share with LaRon, who you married. You don't have the responsibility for it in the house you share with Aaron. That's, I think, where he's getting at with this. Why don't you have that responsibility with one of the spouses? Next question was, what empirical data, if any, supports a finding that legal recognition of same-sex marriage reduces discrimination against gays and lesbians? So what he's asking both of them, I think, here is, do you have any data that if we do this, it's going to eliminate discrimination? Now, how do you think each side's going to answer that one? I think it's kind of interesting.
I don't think either one of them can prove it either way, because if you legalize same gender equality, I'm sorry, marriage equality, that doesn't mean that discrimination won't stop. Absolutely, it will continue. However, you'll have some legal recourse.
But I think there's two kinds of discrimination we're talking about here. We're talking about societal discrimination. We're talking about institutionalized discrimination, where I have no rights, I have rights. So we go from zero to one here with rights, which means that I can pay Aaron's bills now. That's something that may not be as visible or may not be as emotional, but I agree, discrimination is not going to stop. But when you can prove discrimination, I can't pay the bills, I can't sign this contract with my partner, I can't sign this contract. You know what I mean?
They're
going to change.
You know, let's take the New Jersey situation, you know, where civil unions are legal, but same-sex marriage is not. You know, if I were to try and put my husband on my insurance, they could easily say, well, you're not legally married. Well, I got a civil union. Well, that's not the same thing. And I really have no. I have no legal recourse. That can be shut down in court. However, if I am legally married and they still say you can't put him on because he's a man. No, I'm married. I have a fight.
Well,
I have something to fight
exactly.
with in court.
And that was the case with UPS that said, no, we only offer health benefits to legally married couples. They refused to offer for civil unions, even though the New Jersey law says
they're equal
and we're forming a commission for people to file complaints with if you're not being treated equally, so let us know. And 500 of the first 1,000 couples did file complaints. But, you know, a company like UPS, which probably has one or two lesbian drivers in New Jersey, felt like while most companies are going to have a small impact with this, they're going to have a huge one.
All I have to do, I mean, is produce in court this couple, this couple. This couple was married in that window of time when 18,000 couples got married.
Right.
This couple was not. This couple gets inheritance rights immediately. This couple has to get convoluted contracts, which still may not hold up in court.
Well,
so the legal recourses for both are completely different.
Another mm-hmm. example, and this would be only if DOMA was knocked down and the federal government had to apply, but Marco, who was our guest several weeks ago talking about immigration, his family came here illegally. He was 5 years old when they came over. His sister got married to an American citizen. She's here legally now. His brother got married to an American citizen. He's here legally now. He can't marry his boyfriend, and so he is still illegal of the three children. So, you know,
right.
that perfect example. How does it end discrimination? There's a good example. I think there are so many examples.
Well, Ted Olson, got 1,500 examples. Well,
there you go.
Well, no, there are dozens of and thousands of examples for each one of these, but good examples of just people we've had on the show. Another question, what are the consequences of a permanent injunction against enforcement of Proposition 8, and what remedies do the plaintiffs propose? That's a real interesting one. That one's a good example of he already wrote his decision, because what he's asking there is, okay, what are the consequences? I've written this. I want to be real honest that when I overturn this, there are going to be consequences. But I don't want to just put that in. I want to show how to remedy them. I mean, he's really showing what his thinking is here and that he's written it, and here's a hole. Give me all of the consequences.
Well, he may not have written it. He may be crafting in his what he wants to say in it.
He's probably come to his decision nonetheless.
True. And, you know, it's a great question, too. Does Prop 8 simply get enjoined? Which means it's stopped, it's not in effect. Does that mean? I mean, really, does it mean now that, bless you,
excuse me,
that people can run out and get married now? Or does it mean that the state constitutional amendment has to be unamended, you know, or
right.
somehow taken off the books? I don't know procedurally mm-hmm. what that means. And I think that's one of the things he's asking is, what does that mean?
Well,
if we stop Prop 8, we enjoin Prop 8,
and it's interesting that he's asking both sides, because it's the defendants who are going to have, I would hope, the most bad consequences that they can show. And
that they haven't been able to show.
That they haven't been able to show.
In the substance of the case.
Well, right. He's giving them one more chance, really, here. He's pleading with them, give me something to work with. We're going to talk about this a little bit more. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. We'll be back right after this.
If you're having a hard time selling that old car truck, or just don't want the bother of selling it, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can help. Just call 817-KNON-AUTO or donate online at knon.org. It's so easy when the tow truck comes to your home and picks up the vehicle. They give you the paperwork that you'll need and relieve the stress of what to do with the old car that won't sell. The number to call is 817-KNON-AUTO or donate online at knon.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink and Laron Landis, and we are talking right now about the Proposition 8 trial, which should come to a conclusion this week.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about these questions. The judge issued a list of 39 questions to address in the closing arguments. I have four more that are very interesting that that just shows where his thinking is going. And it feels like to me that he's pleading with the defense, give me something to work with. And he's really asking the plaintiffs, okay, flesh this out for me. Let's just fill in a few things and let's see where this goes. But that's what these questions really, I think, are asking. If the evidence of the involvement of the LDS and Roman Catholic churches and evangelical ministers supports a finding that Proposition 8 was an attempt to enforce private morality, what's the import of that finding? Now, he's considering what religions are going to say, but what's he asking there?
Well, not an answer to that, but in tandem with that, the Mormon Church this week was reached an agreement with the California Elections Commission, and they're paying a fine.
It's not a big fine.
It's not a big fine.
It's only $5,000.
For a church to be fined, though, by a state is huge.
Yeah, yeah.
It's symbolic, but it was supposed to be $5,000 per transaction.
Per transaction.
That was
okay.
Not reported. Mm. And they didn't follow reporting guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the closing days of the campaign, you know, for Prop 8. Mm-hmm. But and apparently that last 2 weeks they didn't do a filing. And so a lot of stuff that they gave was not reported. But you're right, it was a incredibly reduced fine. But mm-hmm. I think it was more symbolic than anything, is that, you know, they were wrong in that case. So that was a development.
When was the last time you remember a church being fined by a government body in this country? I can't think of another example.
Especially in an election.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, that they mucked with an election.
You know, the other thing is that puts it on record, you spent this amount of money, it gives the IRS the right to do a full audit, and if they're over that 20% limit, they can lose their tax-exempt status.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just shows where it goes.
And by muck, I mean, I don't know that they, like, did voter fraud.
No, we're talking about illegally
contributing. Bankrolling.
Yeah. But what this question gets to, I think, is, okay, we understand that churches and ministers don't like this ruling. Why is it important? In other words, I understand what you're saying. I'm not telling you to believe this in your church, but I don't care what you have to say. We're a government body, and we're talking about non-discrimination for people.
Yeah, you're entitled to think that, but you're not entitled to keep someone else from doing what they want to do.
Next question is related to that. Why is legislating based on moral disapproval of homosexuality not tantamount to discrimination?
Great question.
It really shows his thinking, though. If he was on the other side, he would never have asked the question that way. I mean, it just shows where he's thinking. What evidence in the record, because there is none on the defense side, shows that a belief based in morality cannot also be discriminatory? In other words, I understand your morality, and that's fine, but show me where you're not discriminating there. I'm not telling you to believe differently. I'm telling you not to discriminate. And you can discriminate in your church, but don't tell me that I have to discriminate in public.
Well, and I'll throw this out as something akin. Erin's telling me that she can't hear me very well.
Do you want to share Laurent's microphone then?
Yeah. But I'll go back to a simple...
That is better.
A simple example, and I'll go biblical.
Okay.
Lots of discussion in the New Testament, in particular, about divorce. And we know that, for example, the Roman Catholic Church has, you know, strong feelings about the sin of divorce. Mm-hmm. And very tiny window of having a legitimate divorce. And, you know, if we were to say that, oh, well, you can believe that, but if you want to impose it on everybody else, and therefore discriminate against everybody else, therefore divorced people can't get jobs, divorced people can't have kids, divorced people can't do all of these things. I think that's a prime example of trying to legislate moral morality based on your religious beliefs that does, in fact, discriminate against others. And that's, I think, completely what's happening here. We don't like you, therefore we're going to exercise our power to make sure you don't have any rights. That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And it also shows the judge's thinking here. I mean, this is one of those questions that shows right where he's going. Now, the last question I have is, if that moral point of view is not held and is disputed by a small but significant minority of the community, should not an effort to enact that moral point of view into a state constitution be deemed a violation of equal protection? So we see what argument it is that he is going for. It's the equal protection, because there were several in this. And I think we see what, unless the other side just all of a sudden has come up with some real arguments. But I don't think he's going to buy them, because all of their arguments seem to be based on morality. And he's also limited, okay, I'm not looking for a whole bunch of new evidence here. What in your record, in the written record here, says this?
Well, there's all, there, you know, just read the internet.
You know, because the internet is all kinds of accurate information.
Well, and the guy who sat on the stand and said, you know, where did you get your information? Well, I read it on the internet. As a witness.
As a witness. Yeah, he was the star witness. But that's the one I think that they want to discredit. This guy Blankenship was giving all of this psychological testimony about, you know, gay people are this and they're that, and psychologically they're this and they're that, and he's not a psychologist. He has no degree in psychology whatsoever.
Oh, another Dr. Laura.
Well, and he quoted Dr. Reekers, you know, the rent boy doctor. So completely discredited, and the people he was quoting have been more discredited since then. Anyway, we expect on Wednesday for this to come to the federal court. If the closing arguments are anything like the opening arguments, they will be done in one day. They will not be televised due to a Supreme Court ruling. The defense went to the Supreme Court originally and had the Supreme Court rule that this could not be televised live, recorded on film, and shown on the internet later. And the reason that they used was because they thought that the people that were testifying would then be discriminated against. They would be harassed.
Or that they would be exposed.
Or exposed as frauds.
Anything.
Right.
Why don't we go to the entertainment report?
Alrighty, last week Elton John shocked his gay fans by performing at right-wing radio host Rush Limbaugh's latest wedding. And there's a latest. He was divorcing his third wife at the time. When he met his current wife of 3 years, Rush had a lavish Hawaiian style wedding in Florida, and Elton John was reportedly paid a whopping $1 million to headline the ceremony. Again, the odd pairing raised a lot of eyebrows, and let me tell you, the blogs have been lit up. It's usually, you know, it's 90% one opinion, but I've read some people in our community who's actually defending him.
Okay, what do you think?
What do you think?
Well, I was kind of shocked. This harkens back to the whole Eminem kind of era for Elton.
Which is why I wasn't shocked that he did it.
I wasn't shocked at all. I was just like, oh, please.
Well, I wasn't shocked and I was, but this is kind of a third thing that some other people pointed out, and why Elton John probably should be discredited as, you know, some big...
What were the other two? One was...
gay rights advocate. Of course, everybody Eminem. Knows about the Eminem thing. Well, back in the early 90s when Freddie Mercury passed away from Queen, I guess Queen had like a benefit concert in his honor or whatever, and a member from Axl Rose came on to perform, and I guess the London Gay Men's Choir complained about it. Well, I do remember at the time Guns N' Roses had released a song that was, I mean, just outrageous. Like, it made some egregious comments about people with AIDS and HIV and gays. I mean, stuff that I can't even repeat on the air. And they were complaining, why are you letting this group perform when they said all this stuff about, you know, and that's exactly what Freddie Mercury passed away from. And not only did they allow that group to perform, Elton John got on stage and performed with them, and then after that, he performed with them in another concert. So he just totally ignored what the gay community was complaining about. And, you know, then there was also this thing that Elton John, when civil unions became legal in England, 2 years ago, he and his partner got in a civil union. He made the comment and basically told gay people they need to shut up about fighting for marriage.
It's just as good.
And settle for civil union. So, you know, when you put all this stuff together, it's like, you know, he might be one of the most famous openly gay entertainers on the planet, but is he really a gay rights advocate? I don't know. I would say not.
Okay, here's why. At first I was outraged, and then I was, okay, that's not bad. First of all, I think I don't understand why he did it at first.
I don't understand it either.
Why would you go sing at... If you're a performer, why would you perform for somebody who you can't stand? Well, obviously you wouldn't. And for an audience that would be just completely turn your stomach. You know, why would you go...
Exactly.
Especially when you're a performer who doesn't need the money.
Right.
Okay, so that was my... Okay, but then I realized, or I read somewhere else, he's taking the $1 million and putting it into the Elton John's AIDS Foundation, which is an organization that has done more good for people with AIDS. You know, it's one of the top 10, and I'd rather that $1 million be in the Elton John's AIDS Foundation than in Rush Limbaugh's pocket.
That would be nice, but there's no proof that that's what he's doing. A lot of people have said he's probably doing that. So far, Elton has not released a comment about it at all.
Okay, and that's what I had read that he was doing. If that's what he's doing...
If that's what he's doing, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess he's taking, you know, money from the bad guy and doing some good with it, but I don't know. I'm just...
I don't know. At the time it happened with Eminem, I just kind of... I mean, I love Elton John's music and, you know, grew up with it and... still love it, but I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now.
Yeah,
I don't know that I certainly don't agree with it. I'm not sure I should condemn him, but I don't think I think you're right. He doesn't speak for millions of gay people.
Of course, he doesn't.
The UK, in the US, in Canada, anywhere in the world.
Yeah, and I guess with Eminem, they rehearsed and then they went on stage and they performed. Okay. With Rush Limbaugh, I'm saying who he likes and doesn't like. I find, how do you spend a whole day with these people and fly in and set up and then mingle with all these people and spend a whole day with them? That's the part of it that I didn't understand.
Well, now, Rush Limbaugh has said that he's not anti-gay.
Oh, he said some pretty horrible things, though.
Oh, he said some really horrible things.
Yeah, exactly.
But his comment on this entire situation is that he's not anti-gay,
mm-hmm.
which I find hard to believe. But he is following the Newt Gingrich formula for marriage.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
Hook up first, you know, and in the case of Newt Gingrich, you know, your wife has cancer, mm-hmm. you know, tell her you're leaving with your secretary or whoever it is, and, you know, overlap all those relationships.
So, oh well, that's the Elton John story.
I guess the part of it that had me was, how could he spend the day there? It wasn't just getting up on stage, performing three songs, and leaving and walking away with his check for $1 million. It's not easy to get to where Rush lives, and to get there, I mean, he was spending the day. He was spending the day on...
I have to go a little ad hominem here because I really can't stand the guy. But what disturbs me more than anything uh-huh. is who married Rush Limbaugh.
I just know that...
She's half his age.
Yeah, she's like 33.
Trophy wife?
Trophy kind of? Wife, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All righty. She won an Academy Award for her role in the film The Accused, and now actress Jodie Foster has been accused of assaulting a teenager after approaching her for a photo. The teen, a 17-year-old boy, claims that Jodie pushed, shoved, scratched, and bruised him when he asked to snap a picture of her at the Grove Mall in L.A. Now,
Jodie's side of it.
Jodie's side of it is, no, this was a full... paparazzi. He had a large camera
with a 100 millimeter telephoto.
Exactly, yeah. And they said that she was followed from the movie theater all the way to her car. He kept trying to take photos of her and her children, and we all know she's very protective of that, as she should be. And that's how the thing escalated. But she's claiming, you know, he's absolutely part of the paparazzi, and the guy's father saying no, he's just a 17 year old who has a nice camera. I don't know. But the follow-up to the story is, where this incident happened, there were cameras. Well, supposedly the videotape has all of a sudden disappeared.
Oh, the security camera.
Security camera, yeah.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
It has disappeared.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, I'll have to give the benefit of the doubt here to Jody.
Of course you do.
For many reasons, but the rational, objective ones are, you know, she was stalked and contacted and I mean, when I say stalked, I mean, yeah. He phoned her room and everything at Yale when John Hinckley, before he shot President Reagan, right. You know, trying to get her attention.
So you're saying
he stalked her across the
campus. You're saying
she,
of anybody, has a reason to be paranoid about it.
Yes, yes. And she's had stalkers ever since then, and only in the last year or so, a stalker who had been sending her letters and then sent all of these airports letters citing his love for Jodie Foster as a reason he was going to bomb the airports was arrested and sentenced to prison because he made a bomb threat against an L.A. airport. And that's just one example. She's had dozens of these folks who do mean harm. I mean, it's not just a threat, it's not an inconvenience, and it's not something you want to hide your kids from. These people actually do things.
Yeah.
A man shot the president of the United States because he was, you know, twisted up about Jodie Foster.
California actually has a new stalker law, and I don't know if it's gone into effect or if it actually did even pass, but it had to do with protecting people from some of the more extreme stalkers. I'll bet when I read this story, I thought, the truth is probably somewhere in between.
Yeah.
If he's 17, he might, you know, he might not be paparazzi. He might be. But
yeah.
I understand why she thought he was. If he's 17, he might have been, you know, he's saying, no, I just wanted to take your picture. And but
I agree with you.
He might have been more aggressive than he actually thought he was.
You know, he probably is 17 years old, and he's probably not part of the paparazzi technically, but he's probably trying to be. You know, the internet, there's all kinds of internet sensations these days, and he could have got some really good footage of Jodie Foster, put it on his website, put it on YouTube or whatever. So I think you're right. I think the truth probably falls somewhere in between. But the interesting thing is,
he might have even been a little bit more aggressive than.
Oh, absolutely. If it's found for a fact that he is 17, I mean, she probably could be charged with assaulting a minor.
But that's the problem, though. They say the guy's 17. If he killed her, he'd be an adult.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't understand the rationale there. He can't print his name because he's a minor, so his dad has to step up for him.
Uh-huh.
You know, when this kid, you know, there with his girlfriend, and I would suppose maybe, you know, a lot of the paparazzi will yell a celebrity's name incessantly. Jody, 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 turn around, turn around, Jody, you know, all that kind of stuff, and probably got up in her face or her kid's face.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
Who knows? The security film needs to come back.
It really does. Pop star Ricky Martin has to be cast in a role in the FJ in the revival of Evita on Broadway.
I've talked about that before because my friend Hal in New York is the producer of that, and he told me, I don't know, 6 months ago?
Oh, really?
At least, that he was going to be doing this.
Oh, okay.
This was long before Ricky Martin came out.
Well,
he has been signed for a while.
It's official now.
Yeah, it is.
It's official now.
It is.
I didn't know this. This is going to be the first time that the Evita, the revival of it, will be on Broadway since 1979.
Yeah. There have been some touring companies.
Yeah,
there, but
yeah. Ricky said he's been blessed with the opportunity to perform on many of the world's largest concert stages, but he's never lost his love for the intimacy of the theater. So that's going to be interesting. The website that was responsible for the gay Super Bowl ads that CBS rejected, it's called mancrunch.com, if you don't remember. Now mancrunch.com wants to help celebrate the 5 years of legal same-sex marriage in Canada by offering a $1 million marriage prize for someone to get married. So, David, anybody in mind?
Yeah.
They're going to pay for your trip and accommodations, and it's going to be on live TV. You're going to be on the Toronto Pride float.
As I told him, you know, I never wanted a marriage, but after seeing Sex and the City 2, I will agree under three conditions. Everything is an explosion of white, that there are swans, and it doesn't have to be Liza, but better Barbara will do also. Those are the conditions.
And last, Carson, who says that Oprah doesn't love the gays? Carson Kressley from Queer Eye from the Straight Guy is getting his own show, on talk show, on the OWN network. Oprah is also said to be developing shows for lesbian chef Kat Cora.
Oh, love Kat Cora.
Yeah, so that's going to be good. So.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be back with more right after this.
Check out KNON's brand new website at www.knon.org. You can listen to KNON from anywhere in the world with our live internet broadcast stream. See the program schedule and info on all the DJs and formats. Find out about special events, upcoming benefits, and get advance tickets online. Go to knon.org and support great community radio anytime by making a pledge of support to the voice of the people. The all-new KNON.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
Ever wonder why the Texas legislature only meets once every 2 years? Obviously, the Tennessee legislature, which meets more often, has too much time on its hands. They are considering a bill to remove a longstanding ban on fish tanks in barbershops. There is opposition to the bill, however. Opponents fear trendy pedicures by nibbling fish might come to the state. What's even more disturbing is that Tennessee still has barbershops.
On January 29th at 4 a.m., 200 Alabama state troopers were set to raid several illegal bingo parlors. The raids were called off, but cost the state $130,000. Governor Bob Riley said, quote, no matter what it costs, the law must be enforced. We're happy to know that Alabama is safe from illegal 4 a.m. bingo games. Fortunately, gay bingo is held on Saturday nights in Dallas before the bars open.
And gay teachers in most school districts in Texas can still be fired even if they do an exemplary job. In New York, heterosexual teacher Alan Rosenfeld has not been fired, even though he stands accused of leering at female students. Each day he reports to an empty room, and he still receives his $100,000 a year salary. And that's this year, this week's
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
At the beginning of the show, I did say I was going to pick on Patty for another Albany thing. Did you have another entertainment thing?
I heard that.
Did you have another entertainment
thing? No.
Okay, so here's the story. In Albany, New York, they are celebrating the 40th anniversary of the founding of the city's LGBT center, which was an old brownstone. A professor at the school up there bought this brownstone for like $10,000, and a bunch of us who were still students, by hand, we repaired this. The first gay and lesbian community center in the country. Anyway, so this week, in order to celebrate, pride flags were hanging in different places around the city on 40 different buildings. One of them was City Hall. Another one, though, and this was the controversial one, was the VA hospital in Albany. Now, could you just see that in Waco?
Right.
So anyway, but one patient at the VA hospital, which is about the same size as the VA here, complained, because what they said was, should the hospital fly flags other than ones that relate strictly to government? And it was not a homophobic, it might have been, but it was not said in a homophobic way. It was just, should we be flying any flags that are not strictly government flags?
Well, it's true for other things. I mean, there's that line.
Yeah. So I just really like that one, though. But God, the 40th anniversary, that kind of dates me, doesn't it?
Big time, more so than this show does. Here's a story that I like and I dislike. I dislike it because it might be some discrimination involved, but I like it because it illustrates how there's so many variants of opinions right here in our own community. I guess on Memorial Day at Rehoboth Beach in Delaware, two transgender women were walking around topless. And they were stopped by the lifeguards and asked to put their tops back on. They refused to do so they called the police. So then, of course, they covered back up. Now, the police chief said that there's really nothing that could be done to them because they still had their male genitalia. so they are still technically men.
How did they know that?
Well, I don't know. Because there's not a whole lot of detail.
If you're arrested, there's a strip search.
There is. Well, they weren't arrested.
And you know this why?
Because of the number of times I've been arrested, Jennifer.
However, the Rehoboth Beach Commissioner says that's not exactly accurate. So they're reviewing the laws to see where, how this should be dealt with. But, you know, I've already talked to a couple of my gay friends about this, and there are some different opinions about what should happen. What do you think? Should they be fined or ticketed, or should they be left alone because they still have male genitalia?
Well, I read the story, and the story I read was, I thought was offensive because it was from a local newspaper that referred to these transgender women as he and him all the way through. And so that you know,
it showed you what side they were on.
Sure.
Oh, that mine doesn't. I got this from a gay side.
Oh, okay. Okay. And so that sort of set me off on a tangent there, but when I did see it, I thought there's probably two things at play here. One is an exuberance. You're at the beach. You want to, you know, take your shirt off, whatever. And they chose to do that, but I think it's probably inappropriate. Either there if they're women, they need to
be women.
Be women.
See, that's my opinion. Whether they are legally women or not, they are living their lives as women. They are purported to be women. They have
now I've read
surgically enhanced breasts. You know,
and I've read nothing about the motive because I haven't seen an interview with them. I haven't. Here's what I'm thinking, because I'm not sure which side I'm on this one. I'm agreeing with you on the one hand. On the other hand, I don't know the laws in Delaware. If it was Virginia, I know Virginia doesn't, they're like Texas and don't want to change gender markers, don't want to change birth certificates.
Oh, Virginia's worse than Texas.
Yeah,
but Rehoboth Beach is a
Delaware.
It's a huge gay beach, though.
Yeah,
I understand.
It's very gay-friendly.
I understand that. I'm saying I don't know the laws in Delaware, but if they're anything with transgender people, if it's anything like Texas and Virginia, my feeling is you can't have it both ways. If you're going to call these people men, you have no right to arrest them. That's where I feel.
Well, on the flip side, you can't have it both ways. You can't say I'm a woman, but I'm a transgender woman. But then when you want to walk around with your chest out, all of a sudden say, well, no, I'm a man. You can't have it both ways.
There's a transgender couple here in Texas who got married by playing both sides of the coin.
Yes.
Well, I don't think that was their doing. That was what Texas said.
Well, but that's
the law. I mean, if the law in Texas is that if your chromosomes are male, then you're male.
And that's what I'm saying.
And so she's living as a woman. She marries her partner legally in Texas because her chromosomes are male.
Mm-hmm.
And she's living as a woman. So she's got both. I mean, I've seen it. It's there.
Right.
They're doing it.
And see, that's what I'm saying, though. Also, with them, I don't know what the reason was. If they were protesting, if they were doing this to say, after having their a case to change their gender marker turned down, thrown out of court, whatever, and so they're saying, okay, I'm a man, and they're going to walk around on the beach like any other man. You can't have it both ways. Decide.
True.
And I don't know, because I haven't.
Well, yeah, we don't know.
It.
They haven't specified what these women, what they're legally considered are. But also, I think this raises another issue with the fact that I've always thought, why can't women walk around topless?
Well, in some places they can.
Well, but in most places you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not Europe, unfortunately, in that respect. You know, over there you can.
I have a cute story about that.
Uh-huh.
I was the first time I was in Norway, and this was after I graduated from college. We just wanted to go to the beach, but we had just arrived in Oslo, so we went up to this desk, the information desk, and there's this really cute elderly woman who was probably a volunteer just staffing the desk, and we asked where the beach was, how to get there, and she gave us the directions, and we said, is there a place to change there? And she said, you know, I really don't know, but don't worry about that. Just if there's not, just change on the beach. We don't worry about those things here. She was just so cute the way she explained that. We just don't worry about those things here. But it's true.
Well, the only one I've been to one in the Caribbean, and we did not disrobe. Mm-hmm. And I've been to Hippie Hollow in Austin.
Oh, yeah.
And, in fact, that's where I came out to my cousin many, many years ago. And, in fact, while we were there, I thought it was just so interesting. A guy came to sun himself on the beach and didn't have a thing on, lays down, and now he's going to put his lotion on. Anyway.
I think the first and only beach I've been to like that is when Danny and I went to Cancun. And I swear to you, it was an accident. We didn't know it was that kind of beach.
What did you do? Did you stay?
We stayed. I mean, we didn't disrobe. We just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they didn't disrobe. Okay, whatever. big gay marriage news this week.
Big.
And it didn't make headlines or anything, but this was an interesting one. Iceland legalized gay marriage this week. Now, last year, they elected, let's see if I can pronounce it, Johanna Sigurdardóttir, who's the prime minister, and she's a lesbian. She's mm-hmm. the only openly gay leader of a country anywhere in the world.
And she's been with her partner a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, population of the country, the entire country, 320,000, and they voted 49-0 in the parliament. To legalize gay marriage.
Do you think that's why it didn't really make that big of news? Because, like, nobody's like,
but see,
who cares
I think
about
it's interesting. Now, there were 14 legislators who were not there and so did not cast votes. I'm calling that a unanimous vote. There was absolutely no opposition that was voiced in the parliament. It kind of was unanimous, maybe kind of wasn't, because there were people who were absent. They were not there voting to abstain. They were not there and did not participate in the...
I think there's a little bit, maybe, of, you know, a little bit of dynamic happening where people just don't want to hear anything from Iceland after all the ash. You know, because it is from Iceland that we...
Right,
you know.
The volcano, yeah, that's true.
So what does that bring the number of same-sex legal marriages?
In Portugal, we have Portugal.
Portugal,
that
was
last week.
A few weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah. Does that bring the number up to 9, 10?
Something like that. Something like that. Yeah. It's nice that we're losing count. But
I quizzed David last week, or 2 weeks ago, and he's the best.
I did. I had the whole list.
Yeah, he really did.
I don't
did.
Have it on the top of my head right now. Anyway, the law does specify ministers will always be free to perform marriage ceremonies, but never obligated to. Isn't that a polite way to put it? You know, usually laws are so rigid. I love that wording.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You're welcome to do this, but you will never be obligated to. It's just so sweet.
Well, and it's not legalese. It's not. It's just, you know.
It's just nicely worded.
Right.
It's just nicely worded. And most people in Iceland belong to the Icelandic Church, which is one of the, it's related to the Scandinavian Lutheran churches. And their church has not said whether or not they're going to perform these ceremonies or not. So,
I want to, of the 320,000 residents, what percentage do they have of gays and lesbians?
I don't know, but they...
I'm guessing 5 to 12% like everywhere else in the world.
Okay.
Yeah, plus they elected a prime minister who's
a
lesbian.
They did.
So, you know, it's interesting if you compare... She rules a country that's smaller than Houston, which has a lesbian mayor. Houston has about 2.2 million people. Iceland, only 320,000. Do you think one reason that it would easily pass like this is Iceland is very homogeneous? I mean, Catholics were not allowed in the country until the beginning of the last century. You know, it's just a very, very homogeneous system. And interestingly, though, there was a Jewish community in Iceland while Catholics were not allowed. But another story. But it's very homogeneous. Most people, same church, same ethnic background. And do you think that helps?
Well, I think it's also getting to know when a legislator is in office and getting to know your peers. There's action happening in Nepal, of all places. They're one
because,
legislator who is openly gay. He's a leader of the community, and he presents it to the legislature as the third sex. And because a lot of people there have really no clue what he's talking about, and they've introduced non-discrimination laws in the country. I mean, this is Nepal. This is an ancient country in many ways, you know, in lots of ways.
And you would think a backward country.
Yeah. Yeah, so. This is where people go to climb Everest, you know.
Right.
And You know, and yet they're making progress there because they know this man.
Mm-hmm. In New Jersey, there was an election this week. The main opponent in the legislature, in New Jersey's legislature, the main Democratic opponent, saw a stunning defeat in an election this week. He lost 75% of his town committee in Tuesday's election. Gay advocates, stung by the defeat of the marriage equality bill, won all of those seats. He was backing a 26-person slate for the Hawthorne Democratic Committee, and 19 of his people out of 26 were defeated. The big winner was Jeff Gardner, who's the head of Gordon State Equality, which is like their Equality Texas. They picked up, it was specifically Garden State Equality supporters who they put up.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so you know, he's up for re-election in 2011, and obviously they're targeting him and his seat. So
very interesting. Well, did you hear the news last night right here in Dallas? The very stealth Republican state convention is happening here in Dallas, wrapping up today, and Kathy Adams was defeated as chair of the Texas Republican Party.
Had not heard of that.
59% voted against her.
Mm-hmm. And it's a Republican from Houston who won. They're saying that he's probably has all the same views she does, but interesting. What reasons were given for her loss?
Part of it was there was something that's occurred in the recent past in the Republican Party, where they requested disclosure of financial records within the party, and she refused to disclose. Mm-hmm. And so that she created enemies in her own party because they thought that was not right.
We need to go. We're going out with music with
Seal.
And next week, our guest is Gregory Pines.
I won't be here. It's Father's Day.
Father's Day, and you're a father.